If you recall Yom Kippur, we had an interesting occurrence here in Los Angeles. If you remember, it rained. And it wasn't just a sprinkle. I mean, it really rained. And I was told that it does not rain like that in Los Angeles. And there was thunder and lightning. And it rained so hard, it knocked out power in parts of Los Angeles, including here. If you remember, the lights were out here in the sanctuary. Water is powerful stuff. You just have to look at the Grand Canyon to know that. But it's amazing that water, which is so necessary for life, also has this amazing power to destroy. Now on Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret, we celebrate water. We celebrate its necessity for life. When the temple stood, every day of Sukkot except for the first day and Shabbat, there was this huge party called Simchat Beit HaShoeva, the festival of the house of the water drawing. And it was the biggest party, basically, of the year in the temple, celebrating the need for water because now is the rainy season. In Israel, and here, we start praying for rain on Shmini Atzeret, because now is the time when the rain will start falling, God willing, in Israel. And this is the time when we need the rain so that our harvest, which we plant in the winter, will blossom in the spring. Now, the Torah is often called water. The rabbis commented when you see the word mayim mentioned in the Bible, they said, "Ein mayim ela Torah." When they say water, they don't mean anything but Torah. Because we can't live without either water or Torah. When we pray, we say about the Torah, "Ki hem chayenu ve'orech yameinu," for it is our life and the length of our days. Just like a person can go 3 days without drinking water, the rabbis knew that and they insisted that people don't go 3 days without Torah. So we read Torah on Shabbat and then 2 days later we read it on Monday and then 3 days later we read it on Thursday and then 2 days later we read it on Shabbat. Because we can't live without water and we can't live without the Torah. The Torah sustains us. It gives meaning and purpose to our lives. And without the Torah, we would be lost in this world. We would be drifting and we'd be constantly searching for our connection to God. Without the Torah, each generation would have to rediscover God and would have to rediscover God's message to humanity. The prophet Isaiah said, "Hoy kol tsameh lechu lamayim," let all who are thirsty come and drink water. Now, he wasn't talking to those people who are physically thirsty. He was talking to people who are spiritually thirsty, people whose souls cry out for nourishment. And their nourishment is Torah. When we're lost or when we feel like our lives aren't going the way that we want them to go or the way that we think they should go, we turn to the Torah for guidance. And I don't think it's a coincidence that on Simchat Torah, when we start praying for rain, we're also celebrating Simchat Torah, when we celebrate the Torah. Because we love the Torah, and we want to celebrate it. And we have an entire holiday just to celebrate the reading of it, not to mention other holidays like Shavuot when we celebrate the receiving of Torah, but Simchat Torah is just to celebrate the reading of the Torah. But it's not one day a year that we celebrate reading the Torah. We honor and celebrate the reading of the Torah by the fact that we read it 4 times a week. And we, God willing, study it daily. We honor the Torah. When we take it out of the ark, we all stand up. We reach out to kiss it. We give it this tremendous honor because it's our connection to God. It's our way of remaining connected to God. Now, you already love and respect the Torah. I don't need to talk to you about that. But what about water? Just plain old water. Now, in America, it's actually very easy to take water for granted. You turn on your tap, and there it is. It's clean, it's clear, it's safe to drink. Does anyone want to venture a guess how much water the average American uses in a day? Anyone want to venture a guess? You have to talk a little louder. I'm hard of hearing. 5 gallons? 5 what? 5 glasses of water? 5 gallons? It's actually 150. 150 gallons of water a day the average American uses. To give you some perspective, the average person in China uses 23 gallons of water, and the average person in Mozambique in Africa uses 2.5 gallons of water a day. I know, I found it astounding too. And we think that our water is cheap and plentiful. And it is cheap compared to the rest of the world. In New York City, where I just moved from in 2003, the cost of a cubic meter of water, which is 1,000 liters of water, was a mere 70 cents. In London, that same amount was $1.80, and in Colombia and South America was $5.50. But that's just tap water. How many people here actually drink tap water? When you buy a bottled water, you're paying maybe 70 cents for just 1 liter. So you're paying about 1,000 times more than the price for the water you can get just from turning on your faucet. And I hate to tell you that 40% of bottled water is actually tap water. On a side note, as you know, I'm very interested in the environment, and bottled water is just pretty terrible for the environment. The Pacific Institute, which is an independent think tank, estimated that in 2006, America used 17 million barrels of oil just to make the plastic to produce all of the bottled water that we drink here in America, not to mention all of the oil that we spend on shipping it from across the world, like places in Fiji, if you drink Fiji water, not to mention all of the energy we expended just to refrigerate it and keep it cold. And using all of that oil also produced 2.5 million tons of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, which is contributing to global warming. And the unfortunate fact is that making plastic takes water. So it takes 3 liters of tap water to make 1 liter of bottled water. And we think that our water is plentiful in the United States because we can turn on our taps and we get our water. And relatively speaking, that's true, because 99.9% of people in the United States have access to clean drinking water. But that's not true for the rest of the world, because in the rest of the world, 1.2 billion people don't have access to clean water, and that leads to 5 million people, mostly children, who die from curable water-related diseases. Now, water is a tremendously precious commodity. I don't think I have to tell you that. But we know how precious it is by looking at how people fight over it. People have been fighting over water since the beginning of recorded history. Archaeologists actually found tablets, stone tablets from Mesopotamia from 4,500 years ago, documenting city-states fighting over rivers, because one city-state would divert a river, and the other ones would have to fight them over being able to get access to that water. Here in the United States, the necessity of water for life was used as a weapon in our own civil war here. Both sides actually tried to poison the water supplies of the other side, north and south, to try and get the other side to capitulate. And if you recall, in Israel, Israel has fought many wars with its neighbors, and some of them have been over water. Israel was constantly fighting Syria in the 1950s and 60s and 70s over the access to the Jordan River and its headwaters. And today, every time the state of Israel negotiates with the Palestinians, they talk about refugees and the status of Israel, status of Jerusalem, but they also talk about water, because there are underground aquifers in the West Bank, and as the population in the land of Israel increases and the demand for water increases, water becomes a very valuable and precious commodity, and it's always part of those final status negotiations. I found it interesting when I lived in Israel to read the weather page. Because in the weather page, there's actually a little diagram of the water level in the Kinneret, in the Sea of Galilee. Because to get water to the drier parts of Israel, they have to pump water out of the Sea of Galilee. And the Israeli government decided there should be a red line below which we shouldn't pump the water level below, because then we'd be using too much. But they passed that red line a few years ago, and so you know what they did? They lowered it. They lowered the red line. That's the way they solved the problem. less water out of the Sea of Galilee, pumping more water out of, means less water into the Jordan River, which means less water into the Dead Sea. I'm not such an old man, but I remember the Dead Sea actually used to be one body of water. I don't know if you've seen it recently, there's a huge landmass in the middle of the Dead Sea, and now it's two bodies of water because so little water is flowing into the Dead Sea. And right now, Israel is working on various different plans to try and save the Dead Sea as well as to constantly provide water for its ever-growing population. Now, in the U.S., we also have to worry about our water supply. We have to worry about what we flush down the toilet and pour out in the sink, because all of those chemicals eventually get into our water supply. Scientists are actually finding contamination in our lakes and rivers that feed our drinking water. And they're beginning to be worried because they're looking at the populations that live and breathe in those lakes and rivers. So they're looking at fish and they find fish that are malformed. They find fish that have both either male and female organs or neither, and they shouldn't be that way. They also have found something called a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. As all of the water pours in from the Mississippi River, which has a lot of fertilizer and other chemicals that from our wastewater pouring into it, it empties into the Gulf of Mexico. And there's an area there right where it empties out where nothing can live. Literally no sea life can live in this dead zone. And every year it changes its size based on how big the or how much water is flowing in from the Mississippi River. But in one year, a few years ago, it measured 8,000 square miles. To give you perspective, that's bigger than my home state of Connecticut. It's almost the size of the state of New Jersey, where no sea life can live. And we have to remember that if we're poisoning our water, all we're doing is poisoning ourselves. 10 years ago, if you recall, there was a terrible tragedy in Israel where a bridge collapsed during the Maccabi Games. It was a terrible tragedy. Two athletes lost their lives by falling from that bridge. And two athletes lost their lives because they ingested the waters of the Yarkon River when they fell in. They survived the bridge collapse, but they ingested polluted waters and they died a few weeks later just from ingesting that water. Here in California, we have to worry about our water supply as well. As you may have heard, there are different competing plans in the state legislature to prepare ourselves for a coming drought, because our snowpack in the Sierra Nevada mountains right now is only 30% of what it should be. And scientists are predicting that it will only decrease and decrease as global warming increases, and they are nervous. I don't have to tell you, we have a drought here in Los Angeles, and cities and local town councils are slowly starting to ask people to take on voluntary measures to reduce their water use. We simply can't take our water for granted. We can't take it for granted, just like we don't take the Torah for granted. If we didn't have access to the Torah, we would be up in arms. We would rally, we would fight until we had access to our Torah. Many of our enemies try to destroy the Jewish people by limiting our access to Torah, because they understood that it was the source of our life and our strength. If you recall, the Romans banned the study of Torah on the penalty of death. But the rabbis refused to give in. And we read about those rabbis on Yom Kippur. Those rabbis were the 10 martyrs who paid for it with their lives for the sin of teaching Torah and studying Torah. Ki hem chayenu ve'orech yamenu. Because it is our life and the length of our days, if they hadn't studied Torah, they would have been dead anyway. Rabbi Akiva, perhaps the greatest rabbi of his generation, was one of those 10 martyrs. But he didn't start out as a learned man. He actually started out as a poor, illiterate shepherd. Now, he was a Jew. He understood that the Torah was important, but his life was based on shepherding, and that's how he was able to feed himself. Theoretically, if he could, he would have studied, but who had the time? He was too busy feeding, trying to feed himself. He actually worked for a very wealthy man as a shepherd, and his wife, or his intended wife, was the daughter of this wealthy man, and he said, I want to marry you. And she said, I would love to marry you too, but you have to study Torah. So what was he going to do? He said, what am I going to do? I'm 40 years old. You want me to study Torah? I don't even know how to read and write. So he was very distraught. He went to go relax, and he went to sit by a river. And he sat by a river, and he noticed a stone sitting there on the riverbank with a hole in it. And he was a curious man, so he looked at this stone. He was trying to figure out, why was there a hole in the side of this stone? And as he looked more closely, he could see that the hole was made by the water, constantly running over it from the river. This amazing substance, this soft water, had bore a hole in a hard stone. And Rabbi Akiva, whose heart had become like a stone, it had hardened against the possibility of ever learning, now understood that the soft waters of Torah could penetrate even his heart. Today we've concluded our holiday season, and we've ended it celebrating Torah and also celebrating water. Let us be like Rabbi Akiva, and let the soft waters of Torah penetrate our hearts. Now that the holidays are over, here at Sinai Temple, we begin again our adult education classes. Find a class that you love. Find a subject that you're interested in, and be a part of our learning community. And as we give honor and respect to the Torah, which nurtures our souls and sustains our spiritual lives, let's not forget to also honor and respect water. In our parsha, God commanded Adam, when he placed him in the Garden of Eden, le'ovda u'le'shomra, till the garden, but also guard it. We're commanded to use the earth, but also to protect it. So you can do things like putting a water filter in your home instead of buying bottled water. You can find cleaners for your home that don't pollute. You can install water-saving devices in your home. And the LA Department of Water and Power, I found out, is even giving away showerheads, low-flow showerheads, for free. You just have to install it. Slowly but surely, like that river boring that hole in the rock, we can make Torah study and water conservation part of our daily lives. Shabbat Shalom.